Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Today we've got Frank Lewis, who is an experienced international non-executive director. Hi Frank, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. So we've been looking at your website, franklewis.co.uk. You've got a number of interesting articles on there about yourself and the various sort of corporate governance elements and international IPOs and elements that you sort of talk about in terms of best practice of being a non-exec director or chairman.
So
I just wanted to pick up on a couple of those articles today, one of which is on international IPOs and the other to do with Chinese companies that are looking to IPO in the UK.
Yeah.
So in terms of your experience, do you just want to give us an overview of that international IPO article in terms of sort of main principles that you see that boards should be looking at when they're looking at IPOing in the UK?
Well, good, interesting question. And the two aspects, one from a board perspective and from a listing point of view, it depends on where the company comes from. If it's more Eastern Asian or Eastern European or whatever, one would have to look at it slightly differently. But fundamentally, the major issues are culture and behavior of the management, because the way we operate generally in terms of the rules and regulations to list a company is quite alien in some ways to the culture and the way companies operate. And specifically, I would say, in China and from that part of the world. They don't, you know, we also obviously, conversely, have to understand how we need to deal with them if we would like them to list here. And the fundamental areas, obviously, is the language, the way they run their businesses. And in some ways, unless they're properly educated and they have people who have worked in the West, it's a bit of a culture shock for them coming to do business or do an IPO in this country, and for them to for them to explain to them that they don't sort of meet the transparency and corporate governance and ongoing obligations which is required to become a listed company and have a successful time and grow on a stock market.
Yeah, I mean, so you've been involved with three different companies from China. What sectors were those in?
The first one was mainly two. One was was going to do a listing on a standard, but the first one was a mobile phone assembly company.
Right.
And the second one was a ceramics company.
Okay. And what were the kind of barriers you found when those companies were looking to come over?
Fundamentally, they were similar. In quite strange, in the sense that in both companies, the major shareholder and CEO didn't speak English.
Right.
Both companies, the FD spoke English. And in the mobile phone company, fortunately for me, I had two very good NEDs who had experience of dealing in the West in China. Whereas the ceramics company, just the FD spoke English. And therefore, it was not easy to ensure there was proper corporate governance, to try ensure that what you received was accurate and correct. And therefore, I made it my business to try and talk with the people, mainly or try to get information on a weekly basis from the FDs, and build a relationship as well with the CEOs in a way through the FDs to show that I was very interested to make sure that they were looked after and ensure that they knew what was needed in terms of the rules. Fortunately for me, because of the way I operated, both those companies didn't really have a problem with the AIM rules. So there were other issues involved, but there was no problem with the AIM rules. With the mobile phone company, after 2 years, unfortunately, the CEO, which is common knowledge because it's written about, was pledged his shares to an outsider and couldn't repay, so he ran away and still not found to this day. And I had to sort out a company with 500 employees working in China together with the non-execs, and we did it in a way which sorted the whole thing out. And also that company, the person who lent him the money came to me and said he wanted to continue the business. And he put in some funds to continue. However, he didn't produce any other new company, so we decided to do a voluntary liquidation and close it up without any prejudice to anybody.
I mean, in your opinion, are foreign companies better looking at AIM, or does the main market offer sort of slightly sort of better sort of rules and regs that work best for those kind of companies?
Well, the main market, if you're referring to standard listings, because there's two, there's a premium listing and standard listings.
Sure.
I would say, well, that's only relatively new, the standard listings today, and also the people, you know, to do a standard listing today, you need a 700,000 share capital and a 25% free float of EEA countries, not 25% in Asia or that part of the world, which people didn't really readily understand. Mm. So you need to make sure, first of all, that you have the right structure to do so. But also the FCA is very, it's not that easy, although the rules are easier, but because you need approval of the FCA initially to approve the prospectus and et cetera. That they look at today, they're looking more and more at the background of the shareholders and who they are, where they come from, in order to make a decision that the company could do well being listed on the standard listing. And on AIM, obviously it's more expensive and it's more rules, which makes it slightly more complicated for companies who want to list there. Fundamentally, there are certain basic rules of in terms of related parties down the line, which people seem to forget because some of them try to do deals without understanding with directors. And so you've got to have a clear understanding on both areas of who you're dealing with and what's happening as a chairman or non-exec director to ensure that the company's complying, which is the major issue with the rules, and meets the obligations as set out and initially.
Yeah, and I just want to ask you quickly about cash shells or investment companies, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah.
A lot of investors have had varying highs and more often lows with cash shells, especially on AIM. And there's obviously quite strict regulations on cash shells on AIM specifically. Yes. So we've seen companies, we saw a company delist last week in 365 Agile PLC. I'm not going to ask you to comment on individual companies per se, but you had China Africa, which was then moved into Pembridge Resources, which obviously you had involvement when it was China Africa and Namibia. That's now a main market standard listing as Pembridge Resources. That was admitted last week. And today I noticed, quite under the radar for many, because not a lot of people seem to be talking about it yet, but Chesterfield Resources PLC have come onto the main market again, looking to make up to 20 million size acquisitions in natural resources sector. So obviously with that move from AIM to the main market as a standard listing, why do you think those companies are actually doing that?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. First of all, I think AIM is adding more and more overriding rules.
Yep.
Number two, it's coming more expensive to list on AIM. And thirdly, in terms of the rules of cash shell, which you mentioned, you know, there's, I think it's rule, I think there's rule 8 and rule 15, basically where you have to, basically to be a, you can't, to be a cash shell, you need to have at least 6 million in the company, and you need to be able to put something and reverse something into it or make acquisitions within 12 months, otherwise you get delisted.
I believe it's 6 months, actually.
Sorry, 6 months. I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
6 months.
No, I read up on it before.
No. My mistake.
Right. So, I mean, that respect, if it's so tight on AIM, which, you know, some people seem to be see to be a looser regulated version of the main market. Why do those companies then end up on the main market? Do you think because the rules around those are a lot more lax on the main market, would you say?
I don't think the word is lax, it's different.
Yeah.
And you've got to still comply, but it is not as severe as AIM, and with all the various rules of engagement in terms of mainly reverse and cash shells and that type of thing. For companies who want to do it on that basis.
Okay.
You know, AIM has still got a certain advantages, mainly in terms of tax advantages and capital gains tax and various other issues, which is beneficial for certain companies.
Yeah.
But what is happening at the moment, it appears that a lot of companies are trying to, because of the nature of what AIM is trying to do, and it's getting more strict in terms of its rules, find it might be easier to list, come as do a standard listing on the main market. You also don't need a 3-year track record like AIM if you start from fresh. And as I say, you need 25% free float, which is the difference from AIM. But they're trying with AIM, they're trying to also increase the free float. And so we shall see how it all works out.
Okay, Frank. Well, thanks for your time today. We're going to come back and revisit some of these articles on your website. And if anybody wants to go and have a look, it's on franklewis.co.uk. Thank you, Frank.
Good. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.